Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Welcome to 2020 Politics War Room with James Carville and Al Hunt. James, you're down in New Orleans, I think, but I am here in Washington at American University. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And James, we, as usual, are at American University. We are partnering with the Sign Institute there. You ought to go, everybody who's listening ought to go on the American University website and look at the Sign Policy Institute, the seminars they're having this spring on politics. James, you and I should take some of them. I think we could actually learn something.
I think we could. I mean, that's a beautiful university.
It is.
It really is. It's Northwest Washington. It's one of the prettiest and best schools you can imagine.
And they have a fabulous president and a fabulous, Amy Dacey runs the Sign Institute. And fabulous Kyle is our engineer right here with us. So, man, we have a real trio here at AU. And the AU Eagles women's team this afternoon plays Lafayette. Let's go out to the Bender Arena. Is it the Bender Arena, Kyle? And watch it. James, the Senate is going to vote to acquit Donald Trump out of high crimes, a foregone conclusion since the beginning, since McConnell put the fix in and Hammer, and they ignored what I think most of us would agree was an overwhelming case. But you know what's interesting about this, and I really want to get you to weigh in a lot on this. The defense shifted. First, it was Trump did nothing wrong. Remember, it was the perfect call. Then it was he really wasn't targeting them to dish dirt on Joe Biden. What he really cared about was corruption. You know, he was the Elliot Ness of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That was funny. Finally, it was, well, yeah, he did it, but it wasn't an impeachable crime. You know, boys will be boys. But I just want to make one other point. I was struck by the Trump lawyers. They were really an all-star team for Trump. Ken Starr, the sex-obsessed Bill Clinton prosecutor who was pushed out of Baylor for ignoring pervasive sexual assault on campus, as we noted last week.
For the record, we had the lawyer representing some of the women there who put in great detail, how utterly negligent Ken Starr was.
Right. And he also, after that, you know, he also represented sexual predator Jeffrey Epstein, joining another Trump lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, who was a social friend of Epstein. But, James, it doesn't stop there. Next, there was Pam Bondi, who tried to smear Joe Biden with a phony charge on corruption. Now, she was the Florida attorney general who got an illicit campaign contribution from Donald Trump in 2013. And then a few weeks later, guess what? She dropped an investigation into the fraudulent Trump University. And last but not least, ex-special counsel Robert Ray, maybe he is least, who was once arrested for stalking. I mean, what a team of lawyers. It's kind of like putting together a forum featuring Richard Sackler of the infamous Purdue pharma scam, Ivan Boesky, and Bernie Madoff on corporate governance. I mean, it was really something, but, you know, it seems they're going to get away with it. What do you think?
Yeah, the only thing I would say, this is what I think kind of secretly makes them nervous. This is a moving ball.
It sure is.
It's not going to stop.
Right.
You know, you have a trial. You acquitted, and then that's the kind of end of the thing. You go out in the courthouse steps, and you say, great, I'm going home. This is just going to keep coming and coming and coming and coming. We don't have any idea of what's in John Bolton's book. We know he's naming names of people that win meetings, right? And we know that they can't do anything because they'll lose a primary. And so they basically sit there and say, well, look, you want me to do this? I'll lose the primary. You know, I might lose the general, Tom Tillis or Cory Gardner or Martha McSally, but you know what? if somebody says, if you get this surgery, you're going to live another 3 months, you're going to take it. And that's just a calculation they make. And McConnell holds all the cards. But this is not, the evidence is not going to stop coming in. It's just going to keep coming and keep coming. And they got all these court cases. I don't know what, I don't have much confidence in the judiciary anymore, but you never know. They in the past, they've like thrown a wrench into this kind of thing. And I'd be mortified.
That is such a telling point. Just think what's come out in the last week. We've learned much more from John Bolton than we knew 1 week ago. And anyone who thinks it's static analysis just doesn't understand Trump. Let me call out just a few senators for special recognition. There was Lamar Alexander, who I first met 40 years ago with Howard Baker, and I thought, boy, this may be another Howard Baker. He's turned out to be nothing but. He is a weak senator who cared more about Mitch McConnell than getting to the truth. You know, I remember when he ran for president in New Hampshire. Remember, James, he said, cut their pay and send them home. Term limits for members of Congress. Well, he's been there 18 years. You know something? He hadn't cut his pay. And then he came up with this absolutely ludicrous rationale. Yeah, he did it, but I don't want to hear any more witnesses. I don't need to know any more, and I'm going to vote to acquit him. Lisa, who we call her Lisa McCowardsky. And then there was finally Ted Cruz. He has become now a Trump sycophant with all kinds of specious legal reasoning. Remember only a few years ago, Trump suggested his father might have been complicit in the assassination of President Kennedy, and he said that Cruz's wife was ugly. Now we understand why John McCain said Ted Cruz was the most unpopular person in the Senate. And just finally, I would say, I covered the Senate many years ago, and I covered Congress. I love the House more, actually. But I had a certain reverence for the Senate as an institution. Whether it was led by Mike Mansfield or George Mitchell or Howard Baker or Bob Dole, no one could have any kind of reverence for the Senate now. It's a sham. It's a travesty. It's really a disgraceful body, and never more so than this week.
Yeah, we've had this conversation a gazillion times since probably the late 80s. You're in an eternal search for the good Republican, all right? That somebody that kind of stands up. We're just dying for Jake Javits, or I don't know who, Chuck Percy to come back. They ain't coming back. Forget about it, okay? That's just what it is. And you saw this on display. Lamar Alexander was a governor of Tennessee. There was a time when he was so popular, he could have won a Democratic primary. He was the president of the University of Tennessee. Until this, he had what I would have said maybe a career I disagree with, but at some level, an admirable career. And he just throws it over the fucking fence. And I understand that he couldn't go home. I understand, Senator Corker, who they did. Look what they did to him. He was a good mayor of Chattanooga. Everything is carpet bombed. And you're just not going to find. The whole Susan Collins thing was just a total setup. All right? And they're going to – Mitt Romney's a one-term senator. They're going to primary his ass, I can tell you. But maybe not, because by the time all of the evidence comes out, they might reelect him. I'll take that back. He has some chance to be reelected. And Utah, of all places, is not Tennessee.
He's not my endless search for the perfect Republican. But I think he did this – I really give Romney credit on this one. I think he did this out of conscience. I don't think he didn't. Susan Collins had her finger to the wind. But this was done, and he got a lot of heat. That new woman senator from Georgia who's petrified that Doug Collins, who made a fool of himself in the House Judiciary Committee, is going to beat her in a primary. So she went and had been a Romney supporter and now accused him of being a liberal Democrat or pandering to him. I mean, the whole thing just makes you sick.
Let's unpack Georgia for a second. Because there is a real political story to be told by Georgia. So Senator Isaacson, who's actually a friend of mine, ran against Zell in 1990, been knowing him, I've gone to dinner with him, and I get along with Senator Isaacson, okay? I don't think he's a particularly courageous politician, but he's a good guy. So the governor has a near-death experience with Stacey Abrams, who I always thought was smart, until she said that she was going to be president by 2040, which tells me that she'll never be president because she said that. And any smart person, although I'm sure she wants to be president, no smart politician would ever say that. All right? That's almost a disqualifying thing to say. Now, so Brian Kemp, who was the right-wing governor of Georgia, saw what was in front of him. So the Trump people wanted to put Doug Collins in there. And he saw what was happening in the suburbs. And he puts in Kelly. She, of course, you know, thinks she's in the establishment lane. You're not in the establishment lane, woman. You better get in the goddamn Trump lane or you're done. Now, but there are two people up. And my sources in Georgia tell me the Democrats are on the verge of recruiting two really good candidates. Right? This is not and Kemp has lost control of the Republican Party in Georgia because he's conflicted. He knows he can't win re-election with the same demographic deck that he with a different demographic deck than he had in 2018. And he was trying to escape it, and they wouldn't let him escape. And if Chuck Schumer and JB and the entire Democratic Senatorial Committee doesn't go into Georgia, and I mean go in there like Sherman went in there, like all in, they're crazy. They have a chance that you pick up two Senate seats.
It would be malpractice not to win one of those Georgia seats.
Yeah, and we got two.
Yeah, you could pick up two, but you got at a minimum pick up one.
They actually thought before that the Purdue seat would be a little easier than the office seat. I don't think they think that anymore. I think they're both equal. And we got, I don't want to say names.
That's the incumbent Senator David Perdue. Yeah.
Right. But they're on the verge of getting two good recruits.
Well, that would be, I mean, if the aforementioned Stacey Abrams really wanted to be president in 2040, she'd have been one of those running for the seat. It would be better. I mean, I don't know who those are. You're much more informed on that than I am. But I think it'd be better to get a strong African-American candidate for one seat.
I'm just not comfortable putting names out because friends of mine told me. But at any rate, I think you're on the verge of a really good combo going in. And knowing that, you know, Senator Schumer, you know, he ain't gonna give up on this. I don't have any doubt.
No, I think you're right.
And that was a consequential vote. And now Collins is primary, and Collins getting in the primary now, and he's gonna beat her.
She's gonna she's trying to prove she's a Trump person.
Right. He's gonna beat her. I mean, Georgia is something that we should follow in this show. We should follow Georgia in this show.
Well, and that
it is really
Georgia and North Carolina. Georgia and North Carolina. Let's make those two states prime subjects.
I was born in Georgia, so I'm kind of sympathetic to it.
Yeah.
But
and also North Carolina. It's a Senate race, governor's
definitely.
Race.
Oh, definitely. North Carolina. The Democrats will get a higher percent in North Carolina than will get in Wisconsin. That's my prediction going into 2020.
House races, I mean, it's really big. Let me go back to the impeachment vote, though, and the point that we were making earlier that more stuff is going to come out. I think, you know, there's like, this is future shock. So much happens. You forget on Thursday what happened on Wednesday. John Bolton came out, and John Bolton is a guy who I have disagreed with 98% of the time, but no one has said that John Bolton is not a person of his convictions. One of the complaints against him by his critics is that he is a person of his convictions. He's been accused of a lot of things, a lot of bad policy views, and the like. I've never heard John Bolton called a liar. He also is a meticulous note taker. So he is claiming that he was in this meeting, that Trump, two meetings at least, that Trump directed him to do this. Trump, of course, as always, and all the minions, sycophants around him say, he's wrong, he's a liar. Well, interestingly, John Kelly, who was Donald Trump's chief of staff, Donald Trump appointed him, a former decorated military veteran who knows all the people there, said, I believe John Bolton. He takes notes. He's honest. I think John Bolton is there. And for the Senate not to call him makes it half a trial. That's from John Kelly. That, I mean, you, if I am Martha McSally or Cory Gardner, there's going to be more John Kellys in the next 2, 3, 4 months. And I guess they're just so scared that they can't, they have to ignore. They have to put their conscience and their integrity in a blind trust.
So let's contrast, let's contrast two people. All right. Rex Tillerson and John Bolton.
Right.
When Rex Tillerson was appointed, there was a kind of general convergence that, yes, he's a Republican, but he said was the head of Exxon. He was the head of the Boy Scouts. He was a great Texan. He would know something or whatever. he's been reduced to a pile of salt, right? He's a humiliated, disgraced old man. John Bolton was like thought to be this internal, really ideological right-wing guy that couldn't even get confirmed by a Republican Senate, right? But the problem with Harry is he bought a knife. He bought a gun to a knife fight.
Yeah,
and he's a guy that knows the inside. You know, like maybe Rex Tillerson knows the inside of the energy business. He knows the inside of Washington, and Rex Tillerson allowed himself to be humiliated. Bolton said, "No, not so much, guys." And that's the danger of when you insult 100 people. The odds are one will come forward. And that's exactly right. What happened here. Somebody came forward. And if you look at all of these other people who stood there, who were humiliated, who were disgraced, who were fired by somebody else, and, you know, they got what they deserve. I in some sense, I want to feel sorry for Rex Tillerson. In another sense, man, you were just weak. You were weaker than rainwater.
I've just finished the best book I have read on the Trump administration, far better than even Bob Woodward's or, you know, any of the others. And it's called A Very Stable Genius. There's a lot of irony in that title by the two great Washington Post reporters, Phil Rucker and Carol Lenig. And I mean, you read it, and even if you know a lot about it, even if you have a very, very jaundiced, negative view, you think there is a corrupt criminal who is unstable in the White House, you're shocked by some of these stories. And it's page after page after page, and it's detailed. It's with great specificity. And I would say anybody who's on the fence, and those senators, that should have been required reading this week.
It don't matter. They could read anything. They don't want to lose a primary.
Let's turn to the Democrats in the Iowa caucuses, which is on Monday after spring training. Opening day is on Monday. And the stakes are huge, particularly for Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, who, based on at least a little bit of reporting out there, are 1-2. Everyone's waiting for tonight for Ann Seltzer's final Iowa poll, and we'll find out. I you know something? Everybody seems to think, or the conventional wisdom is, that Bernie's going to win Iowa. He has the surge. I just have a hunch that Joe Biden might surprise, which he usually doesn't do. But if he does, I'm going to give credit. I'm going to give credit to Joni Ernst and some other Republicans, because I think the efforts to smear Biden have backfired and created a certain vote for him that might have not have been there beforehand.
I hope you're right. I actually think I've been in California, been doing a bunch of events. I did things. I've come to a weird conclusion. To some extent, maybe the best storyline is for Warren to do better than people think. Because a rejuvenated, chastised Warren is going to be much harder for the Bernie bros to have a schism. And if Biden is nominee, and I'd be totally 1,000% happy, everything, you're gonna have a schism. And you don't need much. Nader cost us the presidency. Jill Stein cost us the presidency. I am worried sick about a splinter effort in a Democratic Party. Sick. I don't think Trump has any hidden power. I don't buy any of that. But what he can do in with the Electoral College, if he has a splintered Democratic Party, he can get back in. I think the best hope for a unified Democratic Party is that you have a rejuvenated Warren that comes back. I don't know if she can. I don't know if she can. But if she does, she has redemption on her side, and then she can say, I learned a lot. And she can quit chasing Bernie's left tail because she found out that's not going to do you any good. These people want the real thing. But that's my kind of thought right now. I'd be happy out of my mind if Biden ran first.
I agree with you. I think she may have lost that opportunity. I think if she had done that a month ago, it was possible.
Maybe
and I
so.
Don't know
I,
that.
I mean,
maybe
I,
we'll all be. Iowa surprised us in the past.
I don't know.
And it may again.
But
right now, indications are she's not going to do that. Right. And if Bernie wins it, or, you know, wins New Hampshire, I think it's going to make it even harder. She would be very hard for the Bernie people to walk away from. I agree with that. And, you know, walk away is what a lot of them plan to do.
They plan to do it. It's part of their scheme.
It's what they are. And the Democratic National Committee made a colossal mistake. They caved to Bernie a year or so ago, and they said the superdelegates could not vote on the first ballot at the convention. Now, let me just go through this for about 40 seconds. What superdelegates are, they are the elected officials. They are the Democratic Party. They're the people who voters send to the House, who voters send to state houses. That is what the party is supposed to be all about. And the fact that they were 15% or 17% of delegates at a convention, they are not all establishment candidates at all. They swung for Obama in 08 when Hillary was the establishment candidate. But what they do is they understand both two things, winning elections and governing. So they made a huge mistake. Now would be a huge mistake to try to overturn that, as some are talking about, because that'll just give the Bernie people even more ammunition. And it's a real danger. The whole thing is just fraught with explosiveness right now.
Well, you're not going to like this, but I'm just going to say it. Bernie has never been vetted because he ran against Hillary, and you couldn't vet anybody that was running against Hillary because the theory was that she was going to win, so you had to keep the vote total down.
I agree with that.
And that's why the New York Times said the Russians were not involved on behalf of Trump. But that's what I think. He's sitting out there, and he is never. This guy is like running first. He ran for president before, and if it wouldn't be for John Chait and Ron Brownstein, we would know nothing about him. And I am sorry. And if you talk to people in the press, they say, well, have somebody bring it up. They never had to have anybody bring up anything on the Clintons. The press was gleefully out there sending people, making deals with the guy that did the Clinton cash book. Let me repeat that. The New York Times made a financial deal with the guy that wrote Clinton cash. All right? Am I speaking the truth? Is that true?
I don't know.
I know. Of course it's true.
I would agree that Bernie has not been vetted. And what happens is that you go and Bernie is the only criticism. Are you for public option or are you for single payer? Big debate over that. You know, that is such child's play compared to what the Republicans would do to him in the fall. And if the press and the other opponents don't do more now, I don't think Bernie's going to be the nominee, but if he is, it would be just a total disaster.
Let me repeat. The New York Times had a financial deal, a co-publishing deal, with the guy that wrote Clinton Cash. That's a fact. It's a fact that Jill Stein was a Russian agent. We can't whitewash history. All right? They just can't whitewash history. We can't say, well, it's just where it is. What led to this in American politics is in part because of that, all right? It's in part. It's not totally. And if you look at it, but we just can't deny history. You just can't deny history. History is history. They did say that. Look at the
Who's
Harvard
study. Who's denying history?
I'm telling you, it's true. They made a deal with the Clinton cash guy, okay? Go look at the Harvard study as to how many goddamn email stories they did. The whole press. And we say, well, it just happened.
James, I've not only looked at the Harvard study, I had taught a course on the Harvard study. So I am well aware of that and well aware of the critiques. And I think the issues now is, where are we? Where are we today? And what's going to happen in the next couple of months? And I think the Democratic Party has a golden opportunity. Trump cannot win this election. But there is a very good chance, the way it's going, that the Democrats could blow this election. And it seems to me that really is a threat that's beyond anything we've ever had before. And I think
it is a very good chance that the party splinters. But we do a show that people listen to us for something more than cable TV, right? And there are people that caused us to get to this point in American politics, all right? No single person or no single entity or institution is totally responsible. But they are complicit people out there, and they are. And I'm just going to name them. I don't care. What are they going to do to me? It just is. I have a gazillion friends there, right? I've counted the number of people that work at the New York Times that I have on my cell phone. But we ain't whitewashing this anymore. I'm not, all right? So let's move on because I'm scared to death. I'm petrified for the United States.
Yeah, I think the New York Times is a great newspaper that is like all great institutions,
right?
Has made mistakes.
Let's move on. Mistakes are made. I was just going down the highway and there was just a goddamn mistake. I mean, look at the Christopher Caldwell book. Basically, people like me, right? I'm 75. I grew up in Southern politics. And I always, in the back of my mind, thought this entire thing was about race. People said, oh, no, it's about the military and fiscal responsibility. It's about, you know, Clinton's sexual escapades. So the leading light bulb of the conservative intellect says the entire thing started with the enforcement provisions of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Okay, you in North Carolina in 1964. I was in Louisiana in 1964. What do they think? It was just people were going to voluntarily comply with it? Do people really believe that? And if this guy came out, and all of the conservatives, yes, he has a great point. It was the rewriting of the Constitution. It was the second Constitution. Gary Wills, according to these people, was wrong. Lincoln didn't rewrite the Constitution at Gettysburg. The Constitution was rewritten because of the enforcement provisions of the Civil Rights Act. It's like, okay, thank you. I'm 75. Somebody came up and said, you know, James, you and all your friends were right. And thank you. Let's move on.
There is one person who knew that at the time, and that was Lyndon Baines Johnson, who predicted exactly what has happened, would happen. And, I mean, we all should be, this is a much better country because of what they did in 1964 and 65 and 68 with that legislation. But you're right. It enabled those who both overtly and those who covertly today play the race card. And that's a key part of, unfortunately, that's a key part of the Republican constituency today.
We now know, right? It is here, and I read this guy in FT every now and then. He seems like a good writer, you know. I thought he was a. He is. If you read the reviews of this book, he is an intellectual god to these people, and he was being totally honest. He was being totally honest, and it didn't just matter in the South. It mattered in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Minnesota. And you name it, it mattered. Iowa, it mattered in Oregon. Right? The reason I dredge up history is because history is actually instructive. There's something to fucking learn from this. And this is the foundation. You know, you can't say it, and they say, well, gee, why did Ronald Reagan go to Philadelphia, Mississippi, to open his campaign? I know why. And I've seen all kind of apologetic, it was just about, you know, people controlling their own destiny. Oh, come on, man. I've listened to this crap all my life. I live with it. And I'm nice. I know exactly what is behind this. And I've always known it. And now it's confirmed to me. So we'll move on. But I've always thought that. You and I have had 5,000 phone calls. You know I've always believed that.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. We're moving on to a really high level, though, James.
Okay.
Now we turn to our favorite part of the program, Christy Numbers Harvey, who not only is with us today, James, she's here at AU in person. And the only thing better than having Numbers Harvey on her microphone at home is having Numbers Harvey in person. Right.
Yes, it's a rare Christy Harvey sighting. Hi, fellas. How are you? All right. I have two numbers for you today. I'm going to start off with one that is an issue that's really close to my heart, and I'd love to hear you guys talk about it. 3,907. So that's how many people in Arizona accidentally voted in the wrong precinct in 2016. And under former Arizona law, that meant those votes were just thrown out. They did not count, out of there. The same went for anyone who gave their sealed early voting ballots to somebody else to mail. They were thrown out of there. But this week, A federal appeals court ruled that these kinds of restrictions will no longer stand, in large part because, as you guys know, they penalize people who live in poverty. They penalize African-American and Latinx voters. So I think this, to me, is really good news. But, Al, I know this is something that's been really close to your heart for years.
Well, I you know, praise that federal appeals court judge. You know, this is the tip of the iceberg. This is part of a very concerted effort by mainly Republicans and conservatives to disenfranchise people. We talked earlier about those seminal civil rights bills that increased opportunities in the franchise back in the 60s. They're now trying to reverse a lot of this. Georgia, Wisconsin, and Arizona, fortunately, the guy running for Secretary of State wanted to print all ballots in English only. Now, guess who that was aimed against?
Yeah.
And, you know, Stacey Abrams, who we talked about earlier, probably lost that Georgia race because they threw so many people off the rolls. They ended early voting in North Carolina they ended 1 week of early voting in North Carolina. Guess who that disadvantaged? African Americans, young people. It's going on everywhere, and it really is a disgrace. And, you know, three cheers for that federal court of appeals, but boy, this is going to have to be litigated every single day between now and November, because that's the effort. They think if we can't win legitimately, we got to throw people off the rolls and win that way.
James, how do we use this success to build success in other places and really get this momentum moving again?
So what you have to do is, you know, Democrats have never perfected this. It's something called politics. The way that you excite people about the right they have is to tell people that somebody is trying to take about. And Albert, I disagree. This is not mostly from conservatives. It's 100%. It's not mostly. There's no other culprit in this. All right? They know they're not going to win these states if you let people vote. All right? And they're going to do everything they can to stop people from voting. And you need to do everything you can to tell people and run ads, go on the internet, go on social media and say, these are the people that fought for your right to vote. And now you're not going to, and they're still fighting against it. And the fact that Martin Luther King is dead or Vernon Jordan is old and out of the game or John Lewis or anything else, you have to pick up the torch. You have to make this about something bigger than just going out and vote. And if the Democratic Party or these interest groups don't start doing this and stop filing these, or you can go ahead and file all the legal briefs you want, and you may win a, who knows, some court may, every now and then is going to let you win a case. You have to go out and energize people in the sense that somebody fought to give you a right, and that right is not in cement. That right is being challenged now. And it is up to you, you individual, to exercise that and fight for that. If you do that, you can really affect an election. We just give up. We just let people run over us. But why do you think we won six out of the popular vote and six out of seven elections? We let the fucking Bush v. Gore run right over us and just accepted it. And I'm going to go back and read editorials. Somebody just got, well, that the court spoken as well. We're nation of laws. And they were people that I know that are petrified by Trump that kind of agreed with it. And this is, you're not going to beat this thing by, oh, well, it's just one side has a point. Well, maybe we have a better point than they do. No, telling somebody you can't vote is not, telling somebody you can vote is not a better point. It's the only point. The only point.
Well, not only is it the only point, but they come up with this absolutely phony excuse that there is voter fraud. Let me just give you one example. North Carolina tried to do it. They said, well, there's voter fraud. Now, there was a very good study done by a couple of professors, and they found that basically out of 4.8 million people voting, this wasn't fraud, 508 votes might have been illicitly cast, usually by mistake. That was 0.01%. At the same time, ending that 1 week of early voting, it is they concluded, meant that about 18,000 voters couldn't vote, almost overwhelmingly young and African Americans, Latinos. 508 versus 18,000. It's a total scam, and it's going on all over the place, and it really threatens the core of a democratic system.
But what about Hillary's email? Sorry, go ahead.
The only quibble I have with you guys is I don't think we consider I don't think we can sit around and wait for the Democratic Party to take up that fight. I think we have to, everyone who listens to this podcast, take 10 minutes right now. Be a real war roommate and post something about how angry you are that they're trying to take away your right to vote, how much you support things like this Arizona law being overturned, and take the fight to the streets.
I agree.
You know what? I got a number for you, Harvey.
Okay. Four. Go ahead.
I got one number. I got four. Okay. My three favorite females are Mary, Maddie, and Emerson. My fourth is you, Christy, so you're number four.
I'm not going to tell Nancy Pelosi that you said that, by the way, James.
I love you. Oh,
right,
I'm cheating
on
Nancy, goddammit. Or Judy, or anybody, okay?
All right, I got one more, and that's 54. So you guys know, and give me hell for it, but I'm a sports monogamist. Like, baseball has my heart. I'll cheat on baseball once in a while with a little basketball. Every once in a while, I'll step out with a little tennis. But I have one true love. So Super Bowl Sunday isn't usually my thing until this year. I didn't even know who was in the Super Bowl or kind of when it was, but then I saw a commercial for the Chiefs that was so heartwarming and got me all fired up and their whole backstory. So now I'm totally in the tank for the Chiefs. But no one should listen to me because I literally am making all of this decision on a commercial with a puppy in it that made me cry. So, James, where are you going with this? Who do you got this weekend?
Our original thing was called Two Old White Guys.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Andy Reid is an old white guy. I'm pulling for Andy Reid. Shanahan can win 10 Super Bowls every now and time he retires, all right? So I am so identify, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for being a racist, but I identify with old white guys. They have a soft spot in my heart because I identify with old African-American guys, Hispanic guys too, but okay, that's probably a misogynist. No, I am pulling for Kansas City desperately. And Mahomes... So you're a baseball person, but what's happened in sports, when Alvin and I grew up, if there was a ball, we were for it. I'm not a baseball guy, football guy, basketball guy. I like any – if it's in season and somebody's throwing it, hitting it, catching it, kicking it, I'm for it. I don't give a crap. And I'm excited going into this season about the Nationals. I've already got my preseason thing. No one in the world – was more excited about college football than I was. I'm actually, and people come in and say, yeah, I don't care about the Super Bowl anymore. And, for a while, because we were out of it, now, okay, of course I'm going to watch the game Sunday. And, of course, I'm going to pull for Kansas City. And I know that the Saints got robbed last year. But it doesn't matter. I just keep coming back. I'm just a sucker. And, by the way, watch out for the New Orleans Pelicans. I'm just telling you, watch out. These sons of bitches are coming, man. They are coming. And the Greek Freak is coming to town, and
James,
I'm going to be out of town.
You have told me a lot that proved to be true about politics. Who told you Zion is going to be?
You did.
Zion is going to be the brand this year.
You did.
And is he ever?
Right. He is, and you did, and I'll give you credit, but you were not alone. Now, I saw Peter Gruber, I was raising money in Beverly Hills. And he owns part of the Warriors, and he's a really, really, really smart guy. I think he also owns part of the Dodgers. I'm not sure. And there's some concern, and you should ask knowledgeable basketball people about this, that Zion comes down too much on one leg. And given his weight, that he can do that for a few years, but it's going to tear him up.
Yeah.
And he's got to learn how – I do know Peter is a really, 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 really smart guy. All right? Now, maybe somebody – I'm not saying that's 100% true – but I'm going to inquire about knowledgeable people, and you know a lot of people in high-end sports medicine, and is this a concern, or is this just something that somebody on the Warriors told him?
Boy, it makes sense.
It does. It does. And you think about it, that guy weighs 280 pounds.
I've never seen anyone that big who's that explosive, and when you put those two together, I think that makes a great deal of sense to be a concern. By the same token, going back to the Super Bowl, I thought Lamar Jackson, deserved the MVP, the Ravens quarterback. But this is kind of the football equivalent of Zion. You can't run the way he ran for another 8-10 years and survive in the National Football
League. Michael Vick.
By contrast, Patrick Mahomes runs when he has to, and he's great when he does. I think he is now he is the Tom Brady in the sense that he is the best quarterback in the NFL. And I'm with you. I'm pulling for the old white guy coach, Andy Reid. I'm also going to go out on a limb and predict the Chiefs by three. That's a real limb.
So,
huh?
I have to take.
Go ahead.
I want to do a Christie number. 250. Sunday, my home church parish, St. Gabriel Catholic Church, is celebrating its 250th anniversary as a church parish. The church that I made my first communion in is the oldest standing house of worship in the entire Louisiana Purchase. In the United States, we have a shorter history than most people. If you go to, you know, to Rome, you find a church that was built in 900 or something, all right? But that is a pretty remarkable thing. And my parents are buried there, my sister, my brother. And it is a remarkable thing, the fact that the 250 years, and that church is still standing. I think it was built in like 1767. And you should go online and look at it, because people that know architecture tell me the lines in the architecture of this is a marvel. Photographers can't stop shooting this church. And so my heart goes out, and I wanted
and
to
James,
give.
James, how do you go online?
Just you Google St. Gabriel Catholic Church. And it'll all pop up in front
St.
of you.
St. Gabriel Catholic Church.
Right.
We'll put a link on our Twitter page and make sure that people are able to find it really easily. So just come to the Politics War Room 2020 Twitter page and you can
find it. To all of my good
That's
friends.
That's a great back page finale. I would just end with one thing. My wife's mentor and dear friend, James Lair, was put to rest this week, and it was a one. I went to the ceremony yesterday, Little Methodist Church right across the street from AU. It was one of the great services I've ever seen, James. It was they had the Marine singer there, the Marine quartet there. Jim Lair, like you, was a proud Marine. They sang the Marine hymn. They sang Amazing Grace, and 15 people spoke. And you know, if you have 15 people speak, you gotta have a dud or two, right? Not a single one. Everyone was great. And in this age, when we have, you know, the Kellyanne Conways talking about alternative facts and yelling and screaming about fake news, Jim Lair is just a beacon for what we all should be about.
Right, he was. And you know, you know this story, and I told it to you. Jim Lair was a huge deal in Washington, and PBS is considered a coastal thing. All right, it just is. All right, NPR, you name it. On the 5 o'clock news in New Orleans, which in the 5 o'clock news is the breezy Lost Cats kind of coverage, right? Weather. The second story,
right.
Jim Lair had cred and influence, and he had respect all over the United States. All over. He was a giant of American journalism. And that just, I don't know, for some reason, that so impressed me, because sometimes I think maybe we just live in our own bubble. We don't. He impacted people's lives from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific coast. And it was an amazing life. He was a man of amazing contributions. And I hope we learned something.
Well, that's so well said. And you told me that, and I told his wife, and I cannot tell you how she loved that. She just lit up when I told her about that New Orleans newscast.
I don't mean this sarcastically at all. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. It's wonderful that you have 15 people that speak at your funeral in Washington, but let's not forget, this man's influence went way beyond Washington, D.C. It went all across the country, and he is going to be remembered and respected.
Yeah. I agree.
Fondly, as he well should be.
Boy, that's for sure. On that, there is complete, total agreement. We were doing this show at the end of the week this week because there was so much going on. We wanted to wait to see when the Senate caved. They caved on Friday. But we'll be back next week after the Iowa caucuses and after the State of the Union. Oh, I just can't wait for that. So, James, you have a good weekend, and be safe, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Happy 250th, St. Gabriel Catholic Church, St. Gabriel, Louisiana.
Finally, please subscribe, rate, and review this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcast, and above all, be generous. We'll be right back.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.